Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the Arboretum in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two droids that someone's probably looking for, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
We are still socially distant, and we hope you are doing well out there. Today, we want more good news, we want more fun news, and because a lot of stuff was announced on May the 4th, with Star Wars and many other things, it seemed like a lot of stuff was announced on the 4th, even not Star Wars related.
Yep.
It was like a nerd, like, let's get all the nerd stuff out on the 4th. So we have a lot to cover on the nerd news. So nerd alerts are here. And for your latest nerd alerts, we send you over to our anchor, Mikey Slattery.
News anchor Mikey over here with some nerd alerts for you. But like Kevin was saying, it was May the 4th, so happy late May the 4th be with you to you.
And yes, you too.
Yeah, like we'll start it off big up top. There was a whole bunch of Star Wars news. My favorite, we'll start with a rumor, because we did some rumors on our last nerd alerts, but in casting rumors for The Mandalorian Season 2, we have the name that keeps popping up in the news, which is Temuera Morrison.
Yes.
Who is Temuera Morrison, you may ask?
He was Aquaman's dad.
He was Aquaman's dad. But more importantly, in the Star Wars world, he played Jango Fett.
Yes.
Who is the father of Boba Fett, all the clones, that whole history of things. With that character comes the speculation that, is Boba Fett going to be in Mandalorian Season 2? Is Jango Fett?
Yes. Well, Jango Fett had his head cut off, so I don't think he's coming back.
Oh, so he's done for just because his head's gone? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they can stick legs back on guys like they did with Darth Maul, but I don't think they can stick heads back on.
That makes sense. I like it.
Unless you're a droid.
He is not a droid. He's a clone and the original, the human of the clone, so I get it. Can't really bring him back with his head cut off, but you can absolutely bring Boba Fett back because, yes, he was eaten by a Sarlacc pit, but it's Beskar Steel. He can survive that.
Or was it Beskar Steel?
Or was it? Yes.
Well, here's the thing, too. Yeah, in my Star Wars circles, there's also a second rumor that goes along with that. But because he was the human all the clones were cloned off of,
yes,
all the clones in the Clone Wars cartoons are modeled to look like him.
Oh, that makes it, yeah.
And he kind of is that so many years, like the years the Mandalorian set in is also kind of so many years were past the prequels from when they happened to when this is being made. If you follow me, what I'm saying is he is the right age to be an older clone. So
you're saying he's aged in the timeline appropriate to the Star Wars timeline. Okay.
Yes. So he could technically be playing a fan favorite clone, the clone who didn't kill the Jedi because Ahsoka removed his chip. Spoilers for what just happened in the last episode of the Clone Wars.
Uh-oh, you should have given that spoiler alert first, but now I'm with you.
Captain Rex.
Oh, Captain Rex, yeah, the leader in Star Wars Clone Wars, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a spoiler because if anyone watched Rebels, they knew that Captain Rex was around and said he had his chip removed. He just never said how he had his chip removed.
Okay.
They all had a chip in their head that was the Order 66 chip, basically.
Yep.
That flipped when they were supposed to kill the Jedi. And, Captain Rex knew about it because of Fives. There was a whole thread in the Clone Wars where Fives' chip went funny and had it removed. I don't know. It's a whole thing. Clone Wars is, and I'm just going to throw this in here because we're talking nerd talk, but if you ever have time to make a run through the Clone Wars shows, it saves for a grumpy person who was grumpy when the prequels came out. It saves that whole thing for me. The Clone Wars was so well done by Dave Filoni and Lucas. And this past season was done so well that it kind of, you almost wish, I almost wish that's all there was. I almost wish they would redo 1, 2, and 3 as animated with Dave Filoni.
Because of the job they did on Clone Wars?
Yeah, because of the job they did on Clone Wars. It's just so I think I don't want to bang on George Lucas, and I don't want to bang on anyone who likes the prequels. I get it. But I think part of the problem was, and the reason why the Clone Wars works so much better, is that he had more story to tell than he could fit in three feature-length films.
I got you.
And I think the fact that he was able, with Dave Filoni, to tell the story that could breathe and be expanded and have depth to it, I think that really served well what George Lucas was trying to get across. So if you watch The Clone Wars, especially since George Lucas was involved in all of it, you can kind of see what he was getting at with his feature-length films.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it also, between your view of things as my friend and counterpart on the podcast and talking to other people who were millennials who grew up with the prequels, as saw it as kids, and watching The Clone Wars, it's really softened me on the prequel movies.
I got you.
I still have a hard time watching some of the acting in it, and that's not anyone's fault. But, but hey, man, I get it. So, yeah, tangent.
I will needle and say that's maybe the director's fault, but that's harping on George Lucas, and we've done that for years, so I won't even go there. But I'm with you that Clone Wars is phenomenal. There was the teaser alert that alerted us to this was Dave Filoni posted a little art graphic on Twitter that showed it looked like a silhouette of Ahsoka and a silhouette of Captain Rex riding together, and it looks like the scenery of The Mandalorian too. But the fact that they're bringing in all this sort of canon and story work and world building into the next season of Mandalorian to flesh it out just as much as Dave Filoni did for Clone Wars just has me incredibly hyped for next season.
Well, that's the thing too, is that put two and two together. You just put two and two together right there for me. Because, I mean, spoiler alert, the Clone Wars season ends with Captain Rex and Ahsoka, quote-unquote, together. They don't ride off in the sunset together, but, I mean, they know where each other are.
I got you.
And they know what's going on. And so we first get this thing about Rosario Dawson rumors, yep, the Ahsoka rumors, and now we get the Temu Morrison rumors. So, yeah, maybe the people in the Star Wars nerd Twitter / Google group / Facebook group / Reddit groups are right, and they're going to be sticking a white beard on him, and you're going to get Captain Rex and Ahsoka live action happening here.
I'm totally ready for it, because it's also a timeline, like, as much as we know these characters, we don't know what happens after the fact, so I'm ready for more of it. But speaking of Dave Filoni, you let me know about this. There is a new documentary on Disney Plus that they're doing, the Disney Gallery series, where they go behind the scenes on The Mandalorian Season 1, which I hope most of you have already seen. But Dave Filoni is a big feature in that series, and man, you get to see how big of a nerd he is in this docuseries.
I just want to not socially distance from Dave Filoni. I want to snuggle with him and go on road trips with him, and I want to role play with him.
Yep.
And I mean, he is, let's sit around the table and bang our forks and knives and say, one of us.
Yes.
Yeah. He is us. He's us. Oh, he gets it.
He's a nerd putting in a powerful seat, and he realizes that with great power comes great responsibility, and so he seems like he's doing it right.
I know. And the thing is that it also shows the great thing about that. I would really encourage everyone to watch it. You said it's going to be more than one. I thought it was just a one-off.
Looking at it, I enjoyed the first part of it so much that I was looking up online what the details were of it, and apparently it's a docuseries, so there's going to be more episodes in the future, but it is sort of the behind-the-scenes making of The Mandalorian, and they're going to have different focuses for each episode, but the first one was focused on all the different directors that they brought together for the first season.
And man, I'll tell you, so they have the round table with the directors there, and the producer, who is Jon Favreau.
Yep.
And so they have a round table, and who's on that round table, Mikey? We got, of course, Dave Filoni,
Taika Waititi. We got Bryce Dallas Howard. We've got Deborah Cho. We've got Rick Famuyiwa. And we've got, who was the last person I didn't mention?
That's Jon Favreau was sitting there with him.
Oh, and Jon Favreau, of course, yes.
That's who you're thinking of. But the thing is Jon Favreau, and we've talked about how he might need to be up on Nerd Mount Rushmore.
Oh, for sure.
And part of it is because it's not so much that Jon Favreau is a nerd, and I think he's definitely not as much of a nerd as our new favorite Dave Filoni nerd. but the thing about him is he has such an understanding of who he hired these directors.
Yes.
And I mean, the product was so good. The Mandalorian was so good. He knocked it out of the park with who he hired, obviously. And seeing them at the round table and him talking to them, and him kind of is like King Arthur at the head of this round table. And the way he talked about each one of the directors and the support that he gave them. I mean, as artists ourselves, he's the kind of boss that I wish every boss I had in my entire life was like. I mean, he just seems to understand creators so well.
Yes.
And I mean, that guy is amazing. Jon Favreau is, I mean, I liked him in the first place, but seeing him in this documentary, it just, the guy's a dynamo.
I'm with you 100%, especially because I'm familiar with Jon Favreau from his early acting days, like Maid and PCU and like the happy-go-lucky or Happy from Iron Man, you know, even that. I'm used to the silly Jon Favreau, but seeing him at this round table, he's like, oh, he's a power player. He knows how to let people work creatively and give them sort of free rein within the bounds that they have set up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And still know how to pull all these pieces together. He's a mastermind.
Yeah, it was amazing. One of my favorite parts was when they all started laughing because he was like, so we gave Bryce pretty much the hardest episode to shoot because she didn't know any better because she's new. I'm like, oh.
We all knew the pitfalls and traps of this particular filming setup, and we gave it to her.
But still, again, that shows, though, that he's sitting there going like, oh man, this is going to be a difficult episode to shoot. You know what? I'm going to give it to Bryce because I think she can step up and do it, you know? And it's just like, wow, man.
And if there's anybody that can handle the challenge, you would hope that it's Ron Howard's daughter. I mean, yes, she's new to the Star Wars world, but she's been pulling around for a couple of years in Hollywood, so.
Yeah, she came across as, I mean, golly. I mean, they just had the set things and she's smiling and laughing and having a good time. And I was like, wow. It just seemed like it'd be great to work with all of them, really.
Exactly.
All of them, a lot of them.
Yep.
It's real interesting. You know, we've known this from just everything. Anything that you do, when everyone working on it, it has a good attitude and is just really trying to work together and everything. I mean, sure, there's always challenges and stuff, but the product always seems to come out so much better.
And if you have that many minds working on the product beforehand, oh, it's no wonder they struck gold with The Mandalorian, because there are so many awesome people behind it. I do think that Taika Waititi is the funniest in that sort of round table.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had no idea that he was a stand-up comedian first.
Me neither, but it makes sense. Like, he's talking about how everything he made was him and his friends getting together and be like, well, nobody will hire us, so let's do it ourselves. I was like, that's inspirational. It's a nerd being like, we want to make a thing, so let's make a thing.
I know. It's great. And then also, too, the other thing that struck me is, and they didn't shy away from George Lucas being on the set there.
Yeah.
Sitting there with Filoni and Favreau and just kind of just chatting about what's going on and stuff. I mean, this whole endeavor is blessed by the creator. And and also, too, right on that Disney and Lucasfilm, and of course Kathleen Kinney would have allowed it anyway, but you know, sometimes when stuff like this happens, it's like, okay, you're the guy we bought it from, but you're done, so take a hike, buddy.
Yeah, see you later.
The corporations do that all the time, but here you have this, it's not the case. It's like he was sitting down. I mean, he had his own freaking chair. It wasn't like he was just, you know.
He wasn't just a special guest. I get you.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really cool to see as a OG, old school Star Wars nerd.
I would have to say that's something we have to thank Dave Filoni for as well, because he seems like the perfect intermediary between uber Star Wars nerd and casual nerd, you know?
Yeah.
Just hearing him talk about Star Wars in these little docuseries, like, he's just presenting it flat out, like, here's why I love Star Wars, but you get caught up in it. You're like, I get it, dude. I have the same passion you do.
What was funny is there was that one thing where he's talking to Favreau of over those stormtrooper helmets, and he starts referencing something like he's at a convention, you know, in episode blah blah the same blah, and Favreau's like,
yeah, man, that's a deep cut for me. You're beyond me.
Oh my gosh. That tickled me. It tickled me so much because it's like, that's the thing. Dave Filoni is just every guy at a convention.
Oh,
that's
for sure.
Dave Filoni.
Yes.
You know, Jon Favreau strikes me as like, he's the guest at the convention. But Dave Filoni strikes me as the guy who's like there in the dealer's area talking to the dealer about is like,
yeah.
That's what it was like. It was like those helmets were at a dealer's booth and they were on sale. And Jon Favreau is like the dealer. And Dave Filoni's like, oh, this is like episode five, you know? And he's like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, sure,
you
whatever.
Buy kid. One of these helmets?
Yeah. You got any credits or death sticks? Let's get this over with. Yeah.
Oh,
the one
greatness.
The one last Easter egg about Dave Filoni that blew my mind was Dave Filoni is an old animator and he worked on King of the Hill and Avatar the Last Airbender. I was like, yeah. What a pedigree.
Ugh. I know. That whole story where he thought he was being trolled by the SpongeBob guys.
But King of the Hill, one of my favorite animated shows, and if Dave Filoni was even a part of that, it just makes me love him even more.
Yeah, man.
But speaking of Taika Waititi, that leads us to a little bit more of Star Wars news. Taika Waititi is the next director pegged for the next, I don't know if it's the next, but one of the upcoming Star Wars feature films.
Yes. Yes. How exciting. Ah, I mean, it's so exciting because that episode that he did of The Mandalorian had such the stamp of Taika Waititi on it, but he kept it into, because you know how I feel about the movie, the Thor movie he did.
Mm-hmm, I do.
I liked it, but I think it was a little too silly, in my opinion.
I get you.
But he seemed to, in this one, he seemed to know how to play within. I mean, he pushed the envelope of Star Wars humor for sure, but he kept it in the envelope, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he definitely put his comedy stamp on it, but he stayed within the sort of Jon Favreau bumpers, like... You can play around, but you got to stay within here and here.
Right, right. Because, I mean, Star Wars has always been silly. It's always had funny stuff in it. I wish people wouldn't forget that sometimes. People can take Star Wars so seriously. But on May the 4th, we always traditionally watch at least one Star Wars movie.
Okay.
And we decided to go OG. Well, sort of OG, because you can't, only the special editions are out there. And we decided to watch A New Hope.
There you go.
And the whole thing, I mean, it's so iconic. I don't know how people can't forget, though, how much silly stuff is in there. It, especially, like, you got to get this big walking carpet out of my way. And you know. And,
you scruffy nerf herder?
So, no, that's not that. That's Empire.
Oh, but it's still the comedy jokes.
Well, I know. But that whole, I should have known better, but I hadn't watched A New Hope in, I don't know, a year or two. Because there's so much other new Star Wars stuff coming out.
Yep.
But that whole scene in the detention center where Han Solo is talking on the intercom is, I mean, that is, that's comedy gold, man. That's, I mean,
yep.
So much of it is Harrison Ford, I know, because he's greatness, but it was in there. I mean, they didn't cut it out. It was kept in there. It's part of the movie. But that whole thing is, Taika Waititi could have written that. That whole bit of, you know, everything's fine here. How are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Boring conversation anyway. You know, it's just, that whole escape from the detention center with Leia just berating them like some rescue, you know, and the whole thing is, it's kind of a comedy skit.
Yeah, I believe it.
It's a bungled rescue is what it is.
There's hijinks that happen, but the mission is still a success. Absolutely. Another thing in Taika Waititi's favor is that for as much as he has his own specific brand of humor, he did Jojo Rabbit. Have you seen Jojo Rabbit?
I have not. Okay. I'm so mad that I haven't seen it.
But
I don't know why I haven't sit down to watch it. I really need to see it.
That's one to add to your queue. But here's why Jojo Rabbit has me excited for his Star Wars feature. Because yes, Thor is a good action movie, but I'm with you. It is very lighthearted. It is very silly and comedic because it's Taika Waititi. Jojo Rabbit adds those humor and humanitarian elements to a war story that is arguably one of the darkest war stories in human history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the balance of it is masterful. So for as much as Star Wars is political and armies and, you know, battles and entanglements, it's always focused on the human aspect of it. It's always the people that are involved with it, you know, the rebels and the upstarts. So I'm really curious to see how he blends that in a fleshed out 2-hour extravaganza, because with Jojo Rabbit, it's evident that he can do that masterfully. It's great. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting too, because I mean, they've announced so many other directors and stuff that are supposed to be doing things, but I don't know if these are just like, we're offering them the ability to give us treatments, or they are definitely going to be doing it. I mean, you got Benioff and Weiss from Game of Thrones. You got Colin Trevorrow was supposed to be doing something.
That's true.
They're supposed to be giving something else to Rian Johnson, but I haven't heard anything about that. So I don't know.
It could be that there's buzz around the name. That's absolutely a part of it. But I think, like we're saying, with seeing him in behind the scenes of Mandalorian and see how much craft he's putting into the episodes that he's making, he seems like he's one of the sort of the favored group now, where they can let him go wild with a property and expect good results. So
that's what I'm thinking. It's just what I'm seeing. It seems like they're like, wow, this episode was good. People received it really well. Let's give you the movie that we want to do. And it makes me wonder, because Rian Johnson's episode of Star Wars was, a lot of people didn't like it. So I don't know if he's kind of cooled off, or I don't know what's going on with that. And then Benioff and Weiss, they haven't done anything in Star Wars at all. And it seems like in the future, it'd be a good idea to use something like The Mandalorian as your proving ground for directors.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Let's give you an episode or two or whatever of a Disney Plus show, be it Mandalorian or something else they're going to do. And if you can handle that without ruining Star Wars, hashtag, you know, let's give you a feature.
No, I like it, because from the way those directors were talking in the docuseries, it seems like TV is like movies just on a quicker, faster, more chaotic scale. So if you can handle the fast-paced TV episode, then you're pretty geared up for feature-length type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you, but I'm looking forward to it. Taika Waititi Star Wars movie. Oh, I love it. Speaking of Star Wars news, we'll transfer mediums real quick into our last bit of Star Wars news that I have in my notes, but this is for video games. They're coming out with a new LEGO series. It's the LEGO The Complete Skywalker Saga. Have you heard about this?
Of course I've heard about it, because I have a couple of teenagers who grew up playing the LEGO Star Wars video games, all the LEGO video games, really.
There you go. High fives to them.
And it was always one of their favorites. The Star Wars one was one of their favorites, and the Lord of the Rings one was one of their favorites. Those two were the big players at my house back before the dark times. Yeah, so even in their advanced teenage age, they came up to me and said, oh, we're getting this as soon as it comes out, right? So I'm probably going to have it.
And I will be right in line behind you guys, because for my money, the LEGO games, for the majority of the franchise, are some of the best co-op games you can play with a buddy in person ever. Like, for my money, those are just the most fun to plow through with two people. And some people will say, like, because they've done a whole bunch of LEGO Star Wars. They've done The Force Awakens. They've done the complete trilogy already, which was the 6 movies before the new trilogy came out. So there are some people that may be crying that they're just cashing in. They're making, you know, they're taking the old games that they made and just redoing them, refurbishing them and putting them out again. But the trick here is that this whole saga is going to be completely made from the ground up. The levels are all new. The voice acting is all new. The combat system's all new. They are not recycling any of the old games. This is a new game from the ground up. So super excited for it. Yeah.
Even if they were recycling the old games, I mean, come on.
Even if they were, it'd still be fun. But apparently there's going to be, for the old LEGO games, you used to have to progress through it narratively from start to finish before you could start unlocking stuff. Something new that they're doing for this series is that you can dive into any point in the Star Wars timeline that you like and start from there. So that's cool. They're going to be upgrading the lightsaber combat, so you can fight with LEGO lightsabers to your heart's content. And like I said about the voice acting, they're going to actually have people like Billy Dee Williams coming in to be doing the actual voices of the characters this time. So,
oh, cool.
Thumbs up to TT Games for keeping it authentic and keeping it going.
Oh, good old TT Games.
Used to be Telltale Games, but I think with management and buyouts, they had to go to the abbreviation TT Games, but...
Hey, I have a little tangent to throw. I'm going to throw Mikey a monkey wrench over here to throw you off your nerd news. Before we got on, I just read an article out of Forbes, I believe.
Okay.
And they were talking about because this week also, I don't know if this was on your nerd news, but both Microsoft and Sony released more gameplay stuff for their new consoles.
Yes.
For people to see. And they were talking on the Forbes article about how we're starting to reach the limit of how good stuff can look, as far as before you start fully going into Uncanny Valley, before and how the Xbox One and the PS4, the graphics on them are so good already. And on the even on the newer models of those two consoles, they even specifically talked about Red Dead Redemption 2, one of our favorite games, and how beautiful it looks. And even when, you know, they put it on the PC, of course, if you have the right rig for your PC, it definitely looks better on your PC. But they're saying, like, the better kind of between the two isn't that much better as far as it used to be. Because it used to be, you had your console game and then you had your PC game, and it was like night and day.
Yes.
And they were kind of talking about how people are more concerned about bandwidth and how well the game runs and the online connectivity and the response times and stuff than they are graphics, because they're talking about how, like, Fortnite, Minecraft, these games that don't look that high def, or, you know what I mean, are some of the most popular games out there.
No, I'm with you. And it makes sense. Like, I hadn't heard that, but it's not surprising that the limit between computer graphics for video games and computer graphics that we see in movies now, that line is almost blurred. Like, you can take a cutscene from a video game and you could say, hey, this was from a movie, and probably trick a lot of people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you that line is getting harder and harder to beat. And with things like Minecraft and Fortnite, it's going back to the old, like, Nintendo, Super Nintendo game, where it's not really the graphics that are important as long as the game is good.
Yeah.
So if that becomes the focus because they realize, hey, we've sort of hit a plateau on graphics, oops, we have to up our story and character and, like, mechanics, that, hey, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I didn't see it that way. That's something that they didn't talk about in there, because, of course, it's Forbes, so it's more talking about the business of it, and they're talking more about the business of how it used to be every time a console would come out, they'd be marketing how much better it looked than their last console.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been saying for the past few consoles, pretty much they said the last big jump was between Xbox and Xbox 360, that era. You know, that was like the biggest, like, oh, this is a lot better.
Yeah.
But they said even Xbox 360, Xbox One, it was kind of like, yeah, it's better, but it wasn't as big of a jump as before. They just talked about how it used to be when you went from, like, NES to SNES to, as you go through the consoles, the jumps were big, and then they got less and less big. And they said that, are we to the point now where it's like, you know,
where we plateaued? Yeah, no, I get it.
So I thought that was interesting.
Oh, super!
But I like your take on it.
It's super interesting.
Make better games.
Yeah.
Make better games.
If you can't advance in one branch, that causes you to focus on the other branch. But I had that same realization because I've been going through Final Fantasy VII, just got a recent remake, right, on the PlayStation. That's one of my favorite RPGs of all time. But it got an HD remake where they, like we were talking about with the Lego Star Wars game, they sort of redid it from the ground up. And as I'm playing it, I remember that I used to watch the Final Fantasy movie called Spirits Within. That came out, well, I'm guessing here, but like 2001, 2-ish? So a couple years ago. But when that movie came out, it was the height of, like, here's computer animation. Look how lifelike these people are. And then I'm playing this remake of the Final Fantasy game, and it blows that movie out of the water. And it's a video game. And it's just like, holy cow, they've come a long, long way. So
yeah.
Hopefully that means that everything just now default has amazing graphics, and now the focus is on how cool the game is to play, even though it looks really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing on the video game tip. Speaking of next generation consoles, the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X, one of the first games available for those consoles is going to be, they released the trailer this week, Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Oh, those games are fun.
Yes, you're a fan of the Assassin's Creed games. Okay.
Yeah, well, yes, and but yeah, I'll say I am. I mean, my problem with it is not, it's such the nittiest of nitpicks, and that I think the first one of those games that I ever played was the Revolutionary War one.
I got you.
Because I was like, I always wanted a game where you could play in that era. and I enjoyed it greatly. I thought it was one of the best games that is probably one of my top 10 games I've ever played. I'm not sure where I'd rank it. We should probably do that in another podcast. But the thing that got me is that I didn't realize that, and this is how all Assassin's Creed games are, duh. I mean, I came to it late. I forget what number that was. That was like way into the series already when that one came out. Yeah. But I didn't realize that you were like in some kind of machine that was putting you back in time in the ancestor thing. And I was like, what is this? I thought I was just going to be a guy. I mean, I thought it was going to be like Red Dead or something. You're just someone back then.
I got you.
You know? So it was weird to me. The parts where you weren't in it, when you weren't back in olden times,
yep,
it kind of threw me. And I was like, I don't want to do this right now. I just want to run around shooting arrows and using my tomahawk and getting red coats. So that's my nitpick. I didn't know that was part of it. But once I realized that was part of it, fine, whatever.
I'm with you. I only played, like, apparently, according to Wikipedia, Valhalla is going to be the 12th installment of the Assassin's Creed series. It is crazy. I don't think I've played 12 of the previous title, or 11 of the previous titles, so I think I've played a handful of them, and I jumped in on the ones that I like you, you know. But the fact that there has been that many, and they have that sort of loose framework of the Animus that you're talking about, where it's like plugging into the Matrix and you go back in time, I think is their connective thread. And those parts of the games are the draggy parts of the games, but I guess they're necessary to sort of tie everything together.
I'll give it to him. It's creative. It's interesting. It's creative.
Yep.
If it was in a novel or something I was reading, or a show or a movie or something, I'd totally be into it. I mean, it's like a Quantum Leap type thing. So
yes.
But the reason why it threw me off is because no one told me that. I was just like, I get to be a guy in the, you know, olden times. So I mean, it's fine. It's fine. Like I said, biggest nitpick ever.
I get it. I'm with you and I support it. It's cool that, well, we'll talk about Valhalla here just for a second. What this is, it's Assassin's Creed in Viking times, which I'm already on board with, because to play as a Viking, it's like God of War type combat, all that like machismo, super dudes with axes and swords. I mean, that makes my fantasy heart sing. But the exciting part about it to me is that one thing I do like about the Assassin's Creed games is whenever they go back to their specific point in history, they really do a deep dive and sort of pull out really cool details about that time period.
Mm-hmm.
If you go watch the trailer for Valhalla, there's a moment where the main character sees Odin, like in the guise of a person, and he goes, "Is that Odin?" And then the person turns into a raven and flies away. And the main character's like, "Odin is with us today. Let's fight!" And just the fact that that lore exists in this world and we get to maybe explore the depths of it, has me super intrigued.
That's cool. Yeah, it was really cool looking. I like the way those games look too. They have a, that's one thing that's interesting, is that no matter what era they're in, they have a consistent look and feel about them.
Yep, I'm totally with you. But so that's on the horizon for video game news. Let me check my notes for what else is on the horizon. On the D&D tabletop front, because this always makes my heart happy when I see it, in these uncertain times of everybody doing streaming and video conferencing, it's kind of hard to find something fun to tap into, but I came across this and I think I'm going to watch it as much as I can. Are you familiar with the actor Joe Manganiello?
Yes, I am. I'm very familiar with him.
Okay. Well, then this is good news for both of us. Joe Manganiello has his own Dungeons and Dragons club that he's doing streaming episodes of.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the overly handsome actors who grew up a nerd, started acting, and got successful and was able to afford a trainer. So he's like, even though he looks like the guy that would beat himself up in olden times, he is the guy who would gotten beat up in olden times.
Oh, it was like the day when you found out Vin Diesel was an RPG nerd. You're
yes.
Like, wait, what? What?
Yes.
He fits in that sort of club. But here's what blew my mind about the news of this D&D club is that not only is it Joe Manganiello, but he's bringing along his friends, which include Vince Vaughn, a wrestler called The Big Show, Rage Against the Machine's Tom Morello, the guitarist from Rage Against the Machine, both David Benioff and D.B. Weiss from Game of Thrones, the creator of Game of Thrones, will both be there. And also, there might be guest appearances from Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn and Saturday Night Live star Taron Killam.
What? Are you kidding me?
I am not. Those are all names that have shown up and will be part of Joe Manganiello's D&D group.
Oh my goodness. I mean, talk about taking it to another level. I mean, there's so many. I mean, we have some friends we've met at conventions who do this kind of thing, the online, watch people play Dungeons and Dragons role-playing games online. And, you know, there's so many that got really popular, Critical Role, things like that. But, I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? I mean, even like they did that Dean Diesel thing where Vin Diesel was doing it. But the people that were with him were more the, I don't know what to call them, the traditional nerd celebrities.
Yeah, that traditional see. Tabletop players. I'm with you.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's bringing people in that are like, what? I mean, Vince Vaughn is like, I'm going to be an elf in I'm going to cast burning hands on the wall over there. Is that all right? Can I do that? You know?
Yeah, Vince Vaughn definitely has fast talking and charisma on his character sheet. And Tom Morello, the guitarist from Rage Against the Machine, if he's not playing a bard that kills people with his electric solos, I don't know what's going to happen. I want to watch. I'm going to be tuned into all this. It starts at the end of May, so keep an eye out from it. If you want more news, I got that from Nerdist.com, one of our favorites, so go check that out.
Wow.
But that did get me brainstorming, and here's the question that I wanted to end up on. If you could invite any famous celebrity to your tabletop RPG group to just be in your group and play with you, do you have any that off the top of your dome be like, come play?
Off the top of my dome? Well, I mean, we'll go to the beginning of the podcast. Bring Dave Filoni over here, man.
I figured.
I mean, that's he's, like I said, he seems like one of the guys at the convention. You wouldn't have to explain much to him. You know, as much as you'd like to get funny and pick like some beautiful celebrity that you, you know, have always wanted to be around.
Yep.
You'd have to do a lot of explaining sometimes. Like, this is a D20, you know, but I don't think Filoni, you wouldn't have to explain anything.
I'm with you. Especially since he seems like he's the type of nerd that taps into like the underlying philosophy or like existential points of whatever nerddom property you're talking about. So he understands like the sub level of what's going on. And so therefore can go deep in his role playing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm totally with you.
That's what about you? Who would you pick?
It'd be along the same lines. It'd be a show creator. I'm going with Michael Schur, who did The Good Place and Brooklyn Nine-Nine Parks and Rec. And he's known for like comedy things, but every time I watch him, watch one of his comedy pieces, there is that underlying element of sort of mythology or, not, I don't know, philosophy to it that shows he has a deeper appreciation for the silly things he's putting forth. And I find that combination is really great when you have a tabletop player, that the person that can have a good time and be silly, but also understand the complexities of the story you're trying to tell, you know?
Right.
Plus, he just seems like a silly dude to hang out with, so.
Yeah. Because it is a game. That's if we can impart one thing to our listeners, it's like, don't forget, role-playing games, the G in RPG is game.
Yep.
Which, I mean, means a lot. So Monopoly is technically a game, too, and that has destroyed families from coast to coast for 100 years, or however long that damn game's been around.
I think I'm on record in an old podcast for rallying against Monopoly because nobody plays by the rules, but
yeah.
Thumbs down to Monopoly. Oh, but that's great. I wish we could host a celebrity D&D. That would make my day.
You know what would also make our day?
What else would make our day?
Sharing our pizza with those celebrities.
I'm holding up my reheated pizza to the video screen so you could have some.
Oh, man. That's actually pretty good looking.
There you go. Leftover pizza. It's good the next day, I promise.
Of course it is. Leftover pizza. I don't know if I've ever seen leftover pizza go bad. As a matter of fact, I don't think pizza is a thing that can survive being leftover very long, so that's probably why it never goes bad.
There you go.
Because if there's leftover pizza, that's usually the next meal. So our pizza is here, and that means it's the end of the podcast.
The end of Nerd Alerts. Deedly, 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 deedly.
Nerd Alerts. Hope you enjoyed these Nerd Alerts. If you guys have anything you want to tell us, you can hit us up on our social medias at Assuming Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and the Instagram. You can Gmail us at assumingpositions@gmail.com. We want to thank you, of course, for listening, and we want to thank people who help us. We want to thank that guy Brad for being our announcer, Not Scott Productions for providing our equipment, and Jazzar for doing our music. Thanks, everyone. As we open up here in the future, be safe out there. Don't get angry if you have to wear a mask, please. Those places that say no shirt, no shoes, no service now say no shirt, no shoes, no service, no mask, no service. So just wear your shirt and shoes and a mask. So that means you don't have to wear pants. So
so wait, so I can go into a store if I'm wearing shirt, shoes, and a mask and no pants?
That's what it says. It says no shirt, no shoes, no service. And then it's now people are adding masks. So, you know.
I know what my plans are for tomorrow. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's like Porky Pig. And then you have a mask on. So they'll never know who you are. So, see, it's even better.
Porky Pig in it. I love it.
Oh, man. So thanks, everyone, so much. Oh, by the way, next week is episode 100. And we got some special plans for y'all. So, we're super excited about that. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a great week. Stay safe out there. Don't freak out. Wash your hands.
Stay safe. We'll see you next time. Do you have any other points you need to make? Because we're getting close to time, but I got a couple more points we can wrap up on.
More points, more points.
More points, more points. Okay. Are you familiar with the actor Joe Manganiello? Oh, how do I say his name? Shit. Are you familiar with the actor Joe Manganiello?
Manganiello.
Joe Manganiello. Manganiello?
Manganiello, yeah.
Are you familiar with the Joe... Are you familiar with the actor Joe Manganiello?